Good morning. You know, I guess about a week ago, I think it was last weekend, I got to thinking that I had not received any speaking schedule from Mr. Petty. I just assumed I wasn't speaking, so I thought I should at least just contact him. He told me I was speaking this week on the schedule, so I guess I lost that schedule, but thankfully I didn't have anything else scheduled. But when I give a sermon, I always write down where I gave it and the date. And the sermon I'm going to give today, I gave in Murfreesboro once before, January 2003. So I think we're safe on that. If you missed it, I gave it in Nashville, March 2003. And I saw Frankie Cimino and C.J. Gennaro. I never gave it in Florida. So this is fresh for you. Yeah. I've got a title. It's Are You a Wise Guy? Are You a Wise Guy? Now, when I say are you a wise guy or a wise person, I don't mean a smart aleck or a know-it-all. I mean a wise person. Now, I think I look at myself and you probably look at yourself, and sometimes you think you probably, I'm sure sometimes we do things wise, and sometimes we do things like what they call in the book of Proverbs, foolish. And, you know, we're sort of a mixture of things, but the Proverbs talks a lot about what the writer calls fools. And I thought I would turn to Proverbs chapter 9 and read a verse that you're familiar with, because, you know, you and I want to be wise. We don't want to be fools. And yet, you know, we look at our lives and sometimes we do things that we sort of shake our head. And, of course, we look at who wrote Proverbs. Well, many of the Proverbs, probably most of them, was written by Solomon, who was extremely wise, but quite frankly, he was sometimes what you would call quite a fool. But in Proverbs 9, verse 10, very famous scripture, the fear of the Lord, here is where you begin and I begin to get wisdom. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So when I say fear, you know, it's the right type of the reverence of God is the beginning of wisdom. And knowledge of the Holy One is understanding, learning about God. Now, I thought what I would do this morning to try to make us all feel smarter is give you the what was called the easiest test in the world. You can write your answer down or you can just keep it in your mind, but there's only 9 questions. And I read it was called the world's easiest quiz. So I'll let you think about it here and then we'll go over the answers. Number one, how long did the 100 years war last? Yeah. Number two, what country makes Panama hats? You know, you want to feel wise, don't you, or smart. Number three, from which animal do we get catgut? Number four, what month do the Russians celebrate the October Revolution? Number five, you know, I can go through these, they're very simple. What is a camel's hair brush made out of? Number six, the Canary Islands in the Pacific Ocean are named after what animal? And number seven, what was King George VI's first name? Number eight, what is a purple finch? And number nine, where are Chinese gooseberries from? So I wanted you to feel smart. So let's go through the answers. How long did the 100 Years' War last? Well, it lasted 116 years. Yes. What country makes Panama hats? Ecuador. You noticing a pattern here? No one's laughing anymore. Yes. Hope you didn't write these down. If you do, you better kind of wad it up. From which animal do we get catgut? Catgut is a suture that's used a lot of times in surgery, and that comes from sheep and horses. See, the world's easiest test is not really that easy, is it? I could skip the rest, but I won't because I know you want to know the answers. What month do the Russians celebrate the October Revolution? Well, by now you're thinking, well, it's not October. It's November, so you're close. This month, they're celebrating this month, I guess. They're probably shooting off rockets. Number five, what is a camel's hair brush made of? Squirrel fur. Number six, the Canary Islands in the Pacific are named after what island? I mean, what animal? I don't really understand this. The Canary Islands in the Pacific are named after what island? It says it's named after a dog. Got me. What was King George's the sixth first name? It was Albert. You know, this is not, you don't think this is funny, but my mother used to always say when she was a kid, they would call up the grocery store and say, do you have Prince Albert in a can? That was a pipe tobacco, and they would say yes, and this isn't really funny, it was to me, but they would say, well, you better let him out if he's in a can. Yeah, you're thinking, when is this going to be over? What color is a purple finch? It's crimson. And finally, where are Chinese gooseberries from? They are from New Zealand. So the world's simplest test, it's not really that simple, was it? So here's the point that I'd like to talk about today. There is an area between knowledge and wisdom. Knowledge and wisdom. Some of the highest IQ people, I would have to say, I would say when I was in college, University of Tennessee, the most boring class I ever took, well, no, probably the most boring was French because I failed that, but was philosophy. Now, you may love philosophy. I'm not saying philosophy's bad, but I just thought, what am I learning from all this? Because I was hearing about what, you know, Plato and Aristotle and Socrates and all these people who were supposedly so smart. And you know, they had a lot of knowledge, but how do they use it? But there's an area between knowledge and wisdom. You don't just go straight from accumulation of facts to be wise. Now, I can read like you can read. We can come up with facts, but you just by having all these facts and learning these facts does not necessarily make me or you wise. And what you and I want to be is a wise person. And sometimes the more knowledge we acquire, just facts, doesn't necessarily, now it can help, but it doesn't necessarily make us wise just because we can learn a lot of, you know, book knowledge. And again, you know, I went to college, and I'm glad I went to college. It doesn't make you any better than the next person if you go to a university or any kind of college, but it helps, but it doesn't automatically make you wise. There was a guy who was in a fraternity there, and a guy, he thought he would take the easiest class he could find. And it was, it was some crazy, something like rodentology about rodents. He thought, this has got to be easy. Well, it turned out he failed the class because it was quite complicated because he didn't know anything about rodents. Who would want to, really? But except to get away from them. But he failed it. Now, what is knowledge? Knowledge is the accumulation, and follow me here. Knowledge is the accumulation of facts. But then just accumulating those facts doesn't necessarily make you or I wise. To become wise, you take the knowledge and develop into wisdom, and that's called understanding. Understanding is the proper discernment of the use of facts, and turning it in to wisdom. Now, have you ever heard the statement, oh, you can prove anything from the Bible? I've heard that. You know, I had an uncle who was a Baptist minister. I had a cousin who was a Baptist minister for a while, and he dropped out. And my uncle was a good man. I really cared for him. He's no longer alive. But I've heard this all my life. Oh, you can prove anything from the Bible. Well, can you? Can you? Can you? You can't. The Bible is factual knowledge, and when it's put together, it can help make us wise. Now, I'm sure I've told this story before, but I remember a woman that worked. She said every Monday morning they would stand around the water fountain before work and just sort of talk, her employees. There'd be like five or six of them, and they were talking about things. And one Monday morning, someone said, "Which would you rather have, $1 million or to live forever?" And she said, every single one of them said, "I'll take the money." And she said, "Well, I would rather live forever." And they kind of looked at her like, "Why? Wouldn't you rather have $1 million? Now, it'd be nice to have both of them, but I don't think it works that way." But is there wisdom in that type of response? So I want to take a look today, and for us to think about this, about becoming a wise person. And again, I look at myself, I'm not the example of great wisdom, but hopefully I'm learning wisdom, and hopefully you're learning wisdom. But again, just knowledge, accumulation of facts, does not necessarily make one wise. It's more to it than that, is it not? Now again, I quoted that one scripture, but I'll just quote Proverbs 1:7, basically. It says the same thing as the one we turned to earlier. It says, "The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom," the beginning of wisdom. And Solomon wrote this. Solomon, who had what? What is it, 300 wives and 600 concubines, or may have been just the opposite. Didn't seem real wise. But we all want to think about how to become wise. So I want to take a little time today, because the point is that wisdom does not necessarily come through the school of hard knocks. You know, you hear about, well, I've been through the school of hard knocks. I know people that have lived their life going through the school of hard knocks, and yet they're still just knocking heads. But others, you know, hard knocks can help us understand what we need to do, but it doesn't necessarily make you wise. So let's ask ourselves some questions today. And I've got six or seven points. Probably six is not a good number. I have 7 points. And they're not long, but let's just think about this, because I really want us all to think about, I know we all want to become wiser in our life. So let's ask ourselves a few things. Number one, and I'm asking myself the same thing I'm asking you, same thing I asked in January of 2003. Wow, it's a lot. If you remember that sermon, you're lying. If you say you remember it, some of you weren't even born then. I think Frankie was in his crib, maybe. Number one, do we trust ourselves more than we trust in God? Do we trust ourselves more than we trust in God? Let's turn over to Proverbs again, Proverbs chapter 3:5. It says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart, with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding." Now, I look at our society today, and I look at some of the things that go on today. And, you know, I probably used to watch too much news. And maybe I don't watch near as much news as I used to. Now, I know we're supposed to keep up with the news, but quite frankly, I don't want to sit and watch hour after hour of what's called news, which oftentimes is nothing more than just opinion and oftentimes weird opinions. You know, you remember the song? It was a country music song. I don't remember who sang it, but the name of the song was "I Just Want to Be Mad for a While." Anybody remember that song? I remember, I've got the phrase here. It says, "I think I'm right. I think you're wrong. Just leave me alone. I want to be mad for a while." Well, that really is smart, isn't it? Just leave me alone. I want to be mad for a while. And trust me, the mate or the friend would probably leave them alone for a while. So like saying, "God, go on a vacation for my life for a while. Now, I didn't have this verse or these verses in my notes, but why don't we turn to James chapter 1. James chapter 1 for a moment. Because James tells us when we want wisdom, which I trust we all do, what we should do. And in James chapter 1, verse 5 through 8, it's about as clear cut as you can get. He says, if any of you lacks wisdom. Well, I lack wisdom at times, and I'm sure you think you lack, and you probably do, I'm sure, lack wisdom at times. So James says, if we lack wisdom, let him or her ask God. Let's ask God for it. And God, who gives all liberally and without reproach, it'll be given to him or her. Well, there's a very succinct verse. If we want to be wiser, ask God for it, and he'll help us. But let him or her ask in faith. Believe that God's listening to you with no doubting. For he who doubts is like a wave of the sea driven and tossed by the wind. For let not that man or woman suppose that they will receive anything from the Lord because they're a double-minded person, unstable in their ways. So, you know, you can. God says, ask him. Ask him. And again, the point I got here, do we trust ourselves more than we trust in God? I think it's safe to say most people today in this world trust themselves more than they trust God. Now, the way they do things, it may not work out well. But, you know, history is sort of a pattern of the same thing over and over and over again. And I think, you know, we look back and sometimes we can say, well, things are the worst they've ever been, and I'm not saying they're not. But it's always been bad in many ways. Society has always had issues. And the point of the matter is that now mankind has the ability to destroy themselves. You know, it used to be, even though attitudes and human nature had all these problems, we didn't have atomic weapons, we didn't have supersonic missiles, we didn't have all these things that just within just, you know, hours, the whole world could go up in not flames, I don't even know what the term would be. And yet, does it not say that God will have to return to save us from ourselves? Over in Jeremiah chapter 10, Jeremiah chapter 10, on the subject of do we want to be a wise person? In verse 23 and 24, Jeremiah makes a comment. He says, O Lord, here's Jeremiah. He had some challenges he had to deal with, major challenges. He said, Lord, I know the way of man is not in himself or herself. It's not in mankind who walks to direct their own steps. Oh, Lord, correct me, he said, but with justice, not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing. He's saying, God, please correct me. You know, every time I pray, if I ask God for patience, I'm thinking, do I really want to ask for patience? Because what's he going to make me do? But yet, God wants us to ask him, because he'll help us. When I was a kid, there was a rock and roll singer named Little Richard, and he was real famous. You know, I don't know if he's still alive or not, but I remember the story that he was in a plane, and the plane was about to go down. They thought it was going to crash, and he made a statement that if God would get him down safe from that, you know, near tragedy, he would become a minister. And he became a minister, but he was not a very good minister, and eventually probably did the right thing. He went back to singing again because he realized, you know, he made a statement, I'll be a minister, but what does that mean? What does that mean? So ask Gary, and I have to ask myself the question, do we ask God for wisdom? And when we do, are we listening for an answer from God, or are we just trying to look to ourselves for the answer? Do we trust God more, or do we trust ourselves more? Number two, do we get all the facts? Well, like I say, accumulation of facts gives us knowledge, and knowledge can become wisdom, but do we work toward get all the facts? There was a famous baseball player named Yogi Berra. He had a lot of weird statements. I remember one of them he said was, when you come to the fork in the road, take it. I thought that's pretty good, but I guess you didn't. That wasn't even notes. That just came up. I better make sure I don't use that one again. But Yogi Berra said, I'm not lost. I'm just making good progress. I remember, let's turn over to Proverbs 18. Proverbs 18 for a moment. Again, when I think about how many of these Proverbs were written by Solomon, and they make so much sense, and I'm thinking, why didn't he use these things? Verse 13 of Proverbs 18. anytime it says he, it's talking about he or she. He who answers a matter before he hears it, it's folly and a shame to him. Are we not, some of the stuff going on in the world today, they're making decisions without even remotely having the facts. Without even remotely having the facts. It's all emotion. It's whatever, you know, side they're on. I remember when I was in college at the University of Tennessee, we actually, one year, I wasn't in church then, but a group of us, I think it was four or five of us, we were going to go to the Tennessee-Alabama football game. And it was in Birmingham, Alabama, and we were in Knoxville. And I was driving, and they didn't have, I don't even think they had GPSs back then. It's kind of scary, isn't it? They had maps and stuff, and I was driving, and I was driving along, and it was dark, and I was actually lost. But I was too stubborn to admit it. And I thought, well, if I just stay on this road, I'm in Tennessee, I'm going to eventually get to Alabama. And I'm driving, and I remember one of them in the car said, I don't think you're going the right way, but I know what I'm doing. Until I saw a sign that said, Welcome to Georgia. And I kind of felt like a fool. Now, I can make myself feel good because all the states kind of come together there, but I was in Georgia trying to get to Birmingham, Alabama. It wasn't going real well. So it's okay and good to admit we don't know all the facts oftentimes. And a lot of what's going on in our society, people are coming up with all these ideas and they don't really know. They don't have the facts. It's based on emotion. It's based on emotion. So it's okay and good to admit we don't know everything. Now, the story of Esther, I'm not going to turn there, I am going to turn there for a moment. Esther chapter 1. I just want to make a point here. Esther chapter 1. Well, I think I can probably just describe it better. Remember when King told the queen to come out? He wanted all the people to see her beauty, and she refused. And he decided there would be a new queen, and that's just kind of a thumbnail sketch of the thing. And Esther, of course, was eventually named the queen, but Queen Vashti refused. Now, two different times, I remember being in a church service years ago, and I heard two totally different explanations about what Queen Vashti did. One explanation, I heard a minister, and I can say their names, but that's not important. One of them said it was the first recorded act in the Bible of the women's lib attitude. I heard that in a sermon. Another time I heard another minister say, Queen Vashti had strength and courage not to dance naked in front of the king and his guests. But yet it doesn't even say she was told to be naked. Now, I don't really know the answer to that. All I know for sure is Queen Vashti was no longer to be queen. So it didn't mean she was the first recorded act of a women's lib movement, or it doesn't mean she was had the strength to not dance. It could mean either of the, it wouldn't mean the, anyway, we don't know, do we? We don't know. But it's so easy to have an explanation without all the knowledge. And sometimes certain points in the Bible, we don't have all the facts. And we're better to just realize we don't know for sure. We don't know for sure. So point number two, as I've been going on about getting wisdom, is let's try to get the facts. Number three, you know, as I said, they're not long, but they're things to think about. Number three, I wrote down here, do we get wise counsel? Wise counsel. Wise counsel. Now, what do I mean by counsel? Well, counsel is advice, and hopefully the counsel you listen to is wise advice. Now, let's turn over to 1 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 12. 1 Kings 12. I'm not going to go into that too much, but you'll know the story. Here is the death of Solomon, and Rehoboam is becoming king. And in chapter 12 of 1 Kings, verse 3, they sent and called him. I should start verse 1. Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had gone to Shechem to make him king. So he's king. Solomon died, Rehoboam's king. So it was when Jeroboam, who had fled, the son of Nebat, heard it, he was still in Egypt, for he had fled from the presence of the king Solomon. He'd been dwelling in Egypt. Now they sent and called him. Then Jeroboam and all the congregation of Israel came and spoke to Rehoboam and said, your father made our yoke heavy. Now therefore lighten the burdensome service of your father and his heavy yoke which you put on us, and we'll serve you. So he said, depart for 3 days, then come back for me. And the people departed, and King Rehoboam, who had already become king, consulting the elders who stood with his father Solomon while he still lived, and said, how do you advise me to answer these people? And you know the story here. And these were older, not cases necessarily the age, but wiser people that he went to first. And they said, if you will be a servant to these people, and if you will serve them, the job of a king is to serve. But yet mankind doesn't see it that way oftentimes. And if you'll answer them, if you'll speak good words to them, then they'll be your servants forever. It's going to work well. But he rejected the counsel of the elders that they gave him, and he consulted the young men who he grew up with, who stood before him. That doesn't mean the younger men wouldn't necessarily be the wiser. But in this particular case, the ones Jeroboam went to is the people that would give him the answer he wanted to hear. They said, what should I give? How should we answer this people who have spoken to me about light and the yoke which my father put on us? The young man who had grown up with him, they spoke to him and said, you should tell him this. Your father made our yoke heavy, but you make it lighter. Thus you shall say, my little fingers will be thicker than my father's waist. Tell him you're in charge, Rehoboam. And he did, and the kingdom was split, was it not? He didn't use a lot of wise counsel. He did not use wise counsel. And if we want to work toward wisdom, you and I will seek wise counsel. People that you have respect for their opinion and know will tell you an answer based on wisdom and common sense. Number four, and how to become a wise person. Do we follow a God-oriented plan for our lives? Do we follow a God-oriented plan for our lives? Nobody plans to fail. I don't think there's too many people that in their life they say, I want to be a failure. But sometimes we fail, and oftentimes it's because of our plans, that they're not right plans. Proverbs again. Oftentimes I'll turn to Proverbs with a verse here, verse there. But Proverbs 4, on this point, do we follow a God-oriented plan for our lives? Verse 25, Proverbs 4 said, let your eyes look straight ahead and your eyelids look right before you. If you know what we should do, if I know what I should do, do we keep pointed ahead or do we get all off the road? Like that quote I gave from Yogi Berra says, I'm not lost, I'm just making good progress. I'm all over the place. Was he not? People say, I want to be in the kingdom of God, yet do we have a roadmap for getting there? And oftentimes we hear, you know, Bible study, prayer, occasional fasting, meditation. When I was a student in Ambassador College, there was an assistant teacher in the theology department, Old Testament survey. I'll never forget one night at class, because it was a night class, and he made a comment that he had studied the Bible a whole lot in his life, but he was going to take a break from studying the Bible because there's a lot of other things he wanted to read and learn. And I remember when he said that, I thought, that doesn't sound real smart. It's not that you don't want to have other, only read the Bible, but don't you still want to keep reading the Bible? And very, very soon, he had just given up on the church. He said he just wanted to quit studying the Bible for a while. So do we follow a God-oriented plan for our lives? Number five, do we have spiritual balance when it comes to acquiring knowledge? Do we have spiritual balance when it comes to acquiring knowledge? Now, there is an event in the Olympics called the balance beam. And you look at that, and you've all seen it, and you've seen the people, men and women, that can do flips on that balance beam. And quite frankly, probably most all of us, when you get up on that balance beam, it's kind of hard to stay up on it even when you're just on it. It's easy to fall off of it, isn't it? But yet, people can do flips, but they have to work at that. It didn't just come by chance. Now, a company I used to work for sent all of our sales reps out to a place called Pecos River in New Mexico. And it was a team-building approach. There were several things they wanted us to learn to do, learning how to work together. And they had all these little activities, and I could go through several of them, but that's not the point. But one of the things that each of us were supposed to do was had this... We were strapped in, so we couldn't really get hurt because we are all strapped in. But we were each at one at a time. We were supposed to climb this telephone pole. Now it had steps, hammered out. We had to walk up to the top of this telephone pole, which was probably a little higher than this ceiling, slightly higher, not much higher than this ceiling. And at the top of the telephone pole was a little platform. It was just slightly smaller than this lectern here, and we're supposed to climb up to that and then get to that platform, and then we were told, make sure you don't look down, but look out on the horizon and then jump. And again, of course, you couldn't have gotten hurt, but it was amazing. A lot of men, guys and gals there couldn't get up that telephone pole. And I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to or not either, but I somehow got up there. But when you get up there, and you look out over the surface of the sky and the land, you don't want to look down. You don't want to look down. You want to focus on something. Keep your mind focused. And it was a good exercise just to see, because some of the people in my sales class that I thought were some of the, what I would think were the best ones, would be the ones they couldn't even get up the pole. They couldn't get up the pole. Now, Romans chapter 10. Romans chapter 10. Verse 1 and 2, here's Christ talking to the church in Rome, and he says something very, very powerful, I believe, in verse 1 and 2 of chapter 10. He said, "Brethren, my heart's desire and prayer to God is for Israel, because many of the Israelites had left the faith. And more Gentiles were coming in, which was a good thing, but why were the Israelites leaving the faith? And why had they left the faith?" And he said, "My brethren, my heart's desire and my prayer to God is for Israel, that they may be saved. For I bear them witness that they have a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge." Look at what Jesus put up with. The Pharisees, the Sadducees, the scribes, the leaders, they had a zeal, but it wasn't a correct zeal. And they didn't have the proper balance, the proper balance. And Christ had to deal with all these types of people. They had a lot of zeal. They just lacked the balance. Proverbs again. One verse in Proverbs, and we'll move to the sixth point. So we're on the way. There's only seven. I guess I could give you, if we got plenty of time, we could take that test again. I bet you'd do better this time. But the easiest test would be at least a little easier. But we won't. Proverbs 13, verse 20. Here we go. Again, Solomon. "He who walks with wise men," or "she who walks with wise women, will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed." The companion of fools will be destroyed. So God tells us to have the right kind of balance in our life. Number six of how to be a wise person: do we really apply wisdom to what we intellectually know? Now, again, I've kind of touched on this point a little bit before, but we can get all these facts and all this information, and look at what's going on today in our society and all the stuff going on in the Middle East and all around the world and all these things and things we look at and we think, why is this happening? Well, again, at this point, do we really apply wisdom to what we intellectually know? Again, I'm going to go back and say something I said earlier. Let's review that to gain godly wisdom, it's a process. It's accumulation of facts. We can read them in the Bible. We can get them out in various places. We acquire this facts. It gives us knowledge. And as this knowledge is properly used, it gives you understanding. And with understanding, we can apply wisdom to what we intellectually know. I remember giving a sermon once in Nashville years ago. It was on prophecy. And I've given many sermons on prophecy. And I don't really remember a whole lot about what I even said that day. All I remember is a man was there that I think I'd met him before. But he came up to me after the sermon, and he said something nice about the sermon, which was kind of pleasing. But then he asked me, "When are you going to come back and speak again on prophecy?" And I said, "Well, I mean, I don't know. I'll be here to speak, but I'm not sure when I'll speak on prophecy." And he said, "Well, I want to come back when you speak on prophecy." Well, that's fine. But is that the whole picture? Just prophecy? Some of which, quite frankly, we won't understand totally until Christ returns. We won't know every little jot and tittle until Christ returns. Didn't it say prophecies? Some prophecies will fail. And haven't we, over the years, and many people have been very dogmatic on things that really didn't turn out to be the way they thought. Proverbs 18. Verse 1 and 2. Again, it says man, but it's talking about a human being. Man, woman, boy, or girl. A man who isolates himself seeks his own desire. Now, look at our politicians. They are so dead set in getting their way that they don't care who they take down. And we look at that in our society. We look in the places we work sometimes. And they've got these, we're going to do it this way. It's like trying to get a block that's circular in a square hole. It doesn't work. They just keep pounding away at it. A man or woman or person who isolates himself seeks their own desire. He rages against all wise judgment because they've got their ideas already. They intellectually are convinced this is the way it is. How many people have told you, oh, God doesn't want you to care if you keep the Saturday Sabbath? Well, I mean, why would it say in the Bible to keep the seventh day? They'll even change calendars. They'll do anything to say, no, God doesn't really care. Or on the other strip, they'll say, God does care that you have to do this. God does care you have to believe in the Trinity or you have to do this when the Bible doesn't teach something. A person who isolates himself seeks their own desire. They rage against all wise judgment. A fool has no delight in understanding, but in expressing their own heart. A fool is convinced they're going to get their way, and that's the way it's got to be. And number 7, final point. Do we handle... And this one you may sound a little bit off, but it's still all in the same vein of acquiring wisdom. Do we handle conflict wisely? In life, we're going to have conflict. We're going to have conflict with our family. We're going to have conflict with our friends. We're going to have conflict with our workmates. We're going to have conflicting situations at times. And the Bible clearly tells us how we're supposed to go to each other when we've got an issue and supposed to be willing to listen to the other person and not think we can have all the answers. Because I don't care who we are, we don't have all the answers. Only God can give us the wisdom to make all we have the proper answers. But we all have our ideas. We all think we know how to do things oftentimes. But yet, do we handle conflict wisely or do we just make it worse? Probably. What you will say is what I'll say about myself. Sometimes I handle well, and sometimes I don't handle so well. And a lot of quarrels start with a foolish remark that we just can't walk away from our opinion at times. Proverbs, one more time, Proverbs 20. Chapter 20, verse 3. It is honorable for a man, for a person, to stop striving. Why do you want to fight it? Why do we want to fight about opinions that could be, there's more than one way to do things many, many times. Some people's favorite color is pink. Some people's favorite color is blue. Some people's favorite color is purple. Some people's favorite color is green. Which is my favorite color. I know I'm right. But actually, my favorite color is purple. But it doesn't matter, does it? You don't care. It is honorable for a person to stop striving, since any fool can start a quarrel. It's so easy to start a quarrel. Now, in Genesis chapter 4, what happened? Remember when Cain got angry and God spoke to Cain and said, Cain, you got to get control of your attitude, because if you don't, bad things are going to happen. Cain didn't get control of it, did he? And eventually killed his brother. Cain killed his brother. Very sad. Very, very sad. A couple more scriptures here. Matthew 18. Matthew 18. You'll remember this one. Here's Peter came to Christ and asked him a question. 18, verse 21 and 22. Peter came to him, or came to Jesus Christ, and said, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Shall I do it up to seven times? Notice what Peter asked him. He didn't say, how often shall my brother irritate me or get on my nerves? He said, how often shall my brother or sister sin against me? Shall I forgive him seven times? Jesus said, I don't say to you up to seven times, but 70 times seven, meaning over and over and over again. That's talking about when a brother or sister sins against us, not just irritates us. Big difference in sinning and just irritating. So ask yourself a question. Whenever there's a conflict, how would God handle this situation? How would God handle this situation? Matthew 5. Let's go back a few chapters to the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew 5, verse 38 to 42. 38, you've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you not to resist an evil person. But whoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn to the other him also. It doesn't mean we're just supposed to be a whipping child, but we're supposed to have a little, what's the word I'm wanting to use? Just a little patience with others. If anyone wants to sue you, take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. Well, it's trying to tell us, cut each other a little slack. Whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Here's the bottom line, verse 42. Give to the one who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, don't turn away. Now, we got to use common sense in this, but we're also supposed to do what Paul says, final scripture, over in Philippians. Philippians chapter 2. I think this probably explains the verses I just read there the best. Philippians chapter 2, here's what Christ was trying to tell the apostles and what Paul is trying to tell Christians. In Philippians chapter 2, verse 3 and 4, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit. That, I look at myself, that's not easy. That's a lifelong project, isn't it not? Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than themselves. That is a lifelong process that we work toward. Let each of you, and then he can finish it. He's got a little bit more, another sentence here. Let each of you look out not only for your own interest, but also for the interest of others. So ask yourself, I ask myself, are we gaining in wisdom? I'm going to read those four the 7 points one more time. And I did have one other scripture read. Number one, do we trust ourselves more than we trust God? And it's easy to answer these questions. Easy to say, oh, of course I trust God more. But do we? Do I? Do we get all the facts before making decisions? Do we seek wise counsel? Or do we just turn on the TV and see what the talking head is telling us? Or somebody that you think may see things our way? Number four, do we follow a God-oriented plan for our lives? Number five, do we have spiritual balance when it comes to acquiring knowledge? Think about that little balance beam. How in the world do they do it? It takes practice. Do we really apply wisdom to what we intellectually know? And do we handle conflict wisely? The point is, you and I want to become wiser. You and I want to become wiser. Final scripture, let's turn to Psalm 131. Psalm 131. I believe this is the Psalm of David. Psalm of David. It's not long, it's only three verses. Let's think about this. Lord, my heart is not haughty, nor my eyes lofty. Neither do I concern myself with great matters, nor with things too profound for me. We just have to trust God, do we not? Surely I have calmed and quieted my soul, like a weaned child with his mother, like a weaned child of my soul within me. O Israel, and O church, hope in the Lord. From this time forth and forevermore, you and I need to look to God for wisdom. And if we do, we can become a wiser person.